Thanks for listening to another edition of All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com. Today I'm sharing an interview I did while I was at Taylor University's 2014 Francis White Eubank Colloquium on C.S. Lewis and Friends. It was with Dr. Kevin Radicker. Kevin's name may not be familiar to you. However, I'm certain that you are familiar with the person he does a dramatic portrayal of. It's none other than C.S. Lewis. While actually only offering this since 2009, he has done another presentation of someone else since 1991 that I'll let him mention in the interview. Kevin's regular job is professor of English at Anderson University. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. I appreciate your asking me to be on it.
Well, Kevin, let me start out by having you describe your background related to Lewis, things you knew about him, some of the things that you've read, and so forth.
Well, when I was a young person in my teens, I had read only a few of the works that most of us have probably read, if we've read Lewis at all. Mere Christianity, most of the Narnia series. I'm not sure I ever read all of it when I was young. I don't think I did. And the Screwtape Letters. But in the summer of 2007, as your audience perhaps will learn, I've been a person who's been depicting Henry Thoreau for years. But many friends kept urging me to think of another character. I had always admired Lewis's eloquence. I would like to do a Christian person, I thought. So in 07, I started rereading Lewis with performance in mind. And I thought, if I can develop a program like this, perhaps I can sort of fill in the gap for the public and help them understand that, sure, Lewis was a wonderful fiction writer, but what did he do on the nonfiction side? What did he do with apologetics? What did he do on the radio? And so on. So that summer, I reread most of the nonfiction. And by the end of that summer, I realized, yes, I do want to develop a full-blown dramatic portrayal of Lewis. So I spent the summers of 08 and 09 rereading much of what else he wrote, and also reading quite a bit of the secondary scholarly work too. So that by the time I had a sabbatical in there too, in the spring of 09. So that by the time I reached the fall of 09, I was ready to offer my program. So it would be too lengthy to list all the books I've read on Lewis. I know that there certainly are scholars who have read more than I have, but I'm on the road, let's say, to becoming a solid scholar of Lewis.
Well, then let's go more and help the listener know in terms of your acting background. You already made reference to it. Could you give us some more detail about what you had done previously, as well as even when you were much younger, growing up, and that background?
That will be kind of fun for me. It makes me feel rather nostalgic for someone to ask me about my acting background. I was in a play in high school so long ago, I'm not even sure which play it was. I think it was The Dining Room. But I realized I liked acting. So I became a theater minor while I was at Anderson College at the time. I've ended up back at my alma mater and teaching there. I never thought that would happen. And I was in several plays, most of them actually, William, musicals. But my senior year came along and I was encouraged to try out for the part of Henry Thoreau in a famous play called The Night Thoreau Spent in Jail. And that really caused me to realize how much I liked acting. And so when the opportunity came along several years later for me to try out for the Great Plains Chautauqua Society tour way back in 1990, by then I had my PhD, I was teaching at Anderson University by then. Then I decided to try out for that role. I knew it would be on the road for 10 or 11 weeks each summer for 3 summers in a row. The application process was rather demanding, but I was overjoyed when I did learn in December of 1990 that I had managed to procure that role. And so I traveled for the next 3 summers for several weeks with 6 other scholars. And this is relevant in that 2 of the 7 scholars were trained actors. Charles Pace depicts, last I saw him, 6 different African-American figures from America's past, and Charles is a trained actor. Laurie James was with us as well. She's from New York City. She studied under Lee Strasberg. She's a trained actress. So I, to some degree, learned more of the craft of acting during those intense summers. And I've interacted and traveled with other trained actors since, including in the summer of 1997, I traveled with the Heartland Chautauqua, and I was overjoyed when I learned that Lee Stetson would be with us. Lee Stetson has been depicting John Muir in Yosemite National Park for about 30 years. Lee Stetson is featured in Ken Burns' special on the national parks that was on PBS about 3 or 4 years ago. Lee's very accomplished, and I learned a great deal from watching Lee, too. He became a good friend and gave me some advice on how to even sharpen my thorough. But Lewis, the longer I do Lewis, the more I'm enjoying it. I love the people I'm meeting. It does me good to be portraying someone who is such a firm believer in God and to be a Christian. Lewis, of course, is arguably perhaps the greatest defender of the Christian faith in the last 100 years or so.
Well, now, for the listener, I had the opportunity to see Kevin perform a visit with C.S. Lewis the previous night at the time that we're recording. And one of the things that you do early on, or someone introduces you, they set the stage for when Lewis is speaking. How did you come about? Well, first tell us when that is, and then how did you come up for that setting? What went into your decision for that?
Well, to be honest, I'm reconsidering the setting for the show now. I encouraged, as you know, William, I encouraged some feedback from the many scholars who have attended this event. And some of them have suggested that perhaps I should reconsider what I have done thus far, and that is place Lewis in a London church in May of 1963. We know that his health rebounded a bit in the spring of 63. He had a big setback in the summer of 63. So putting the show anytime from July 63 onward would not make any sense in terms of the history, in terms of the facts. But the few scholars I talked to today said maybe I should reconsider the London church setting, because that would still be a sort of very energetic thing for Lewis to have done in that spring. And perhaps instead I should have the audience imagine that they are a group of people visiting the kilns. They are devotees or fans of C.S. Lewis. They've come to visit him. I don't think that's any more outrageous for us to imagine than the London church, perhaps less outrageous, if you will, because you know, William, that the show lasts 90 minutes. Would anybody in the real world talk with a group of people for 90 minutes? Well, I suppose they might. But I like the idea. I'm a little intrigued by that. So I think I'm going to reconsider whether it should be in a London church. But I do still like the idea of it being in May of 63. Why? Well, the number one reason is, by then he had finished writing Letters to Malcolm, which is maybe one of my favorite books by Lewis. If I were to place it earlier in time, say in 61, he had not yet written Letters to Malcolm. I'd rather he be presenting to us after he had finished that text.
Speaking of the text, I know on your website, which we'll be mentioning here later, that you note, I believe, Surprised by Joy is a prominent source that you use. Tell us what you use from that, as well as the other texts that you essentially adapt or quote from.
Well, the 90-minute show, which includes a 10-minute intermission, which you, William, did see last night, contains the most material from Surprised by Joy that I use. It is the show in which people will learn the most I've managed to fit into my show about Lewis's spiritual path towards embracing the Christian faith. So I include material from enjoying playtime with his older brother when they were young, how he realized beauty and joy even in those early days. He, though, also recalls the death of his mother, which was a devastating event in his young life, his difficult years in the boarding schools. Then we move on to the great knock, William T. Kirkpatrick, the wonderful tutor who prepared him for the academic rigors of Oxford. The war episode, and his being wounded in war. Then we move on to his return to Oxford, his progress towards abstract idealism, and then eventually believing in some sort of spiritual reality, but eventually deciding that God does exist by probably 1929. And then there was still a year or two, the scholars are debating this, before Lewis became a Christian after becoming a theist. All of that information is in my show, as you remember. And that takes between 30 and 40 minutes in the full-length show. But that kind of show has its place. There are times when the venue wants a more full rendition of Lewis from a sort of biographical or autobiographical perspective. On the other hand, there are plenty of venues that hire me, and they'd rather see a show that doesn't last 90 minutes, but lasts maybe 40 minutes. When I do that, then a lot of the autobiographical material needs to be set aside, because I would say my major goal is not to inform the public as much about his spiritual path towards becoming a Christian, as much as to allow them to hear what I think are some of the more thought-provoking and powerful passages in his Christian apologetics. And so if I have to give a shorter show, a lot of the autobiography material has to be put aside.
You've already mentioned this to some extent, but in terms of target audience or even a typical or even the variety of audiences that you have had, can you speak to that?
Well, that's a good question. As a performer, I would say that one of our major goals, no matter how we perform, and teaching is a form of performing, we should strive to know our audience as well as we can, and to try to anticipate or assume their particular needs, their particular desires, what they probably will be most interested in or more interested in as opposed to something else about the figure. But when it comes to what audiences will I have, last night's audience was very unusual. I knew that everyone in that space knew of more about Lewis than most of the people I will have when I visit a place of worship, or if I go to a college campus, or if I go to a retirement home, or if I go to a public library. These are all venues that have hired me. And if I go to a library, there might be 10-15% of the people in the audience who have read a fair amount of Lewis, sometimes even more. Nevertheless, I am primarily interested in appealing to that person who doesn't know much about Lewis. Perhaps they've read Mere Christianity, or perhaps they've read a little bit of Narnia, maybe Screwtape. But beyond that, many of the people I meet have not read much more from Lewis. And so my primary goal, if I had to mention my goals, is to educate them more on what else Lewis wrote, give them a good feel for what it would be like for them to read more of his nonfiction especially. And I'm not just rendering text. I'm doing my best to try to render, if you'll forgive the way of this, maybe this is fine to put it this way, the spirit of the man, the soul of the man. You saw the show, William, when I got to the point when he's describing his struggles after Joy died of bone cancer, or when he's angry as a very young man, recalling the horrors he saw in World War I. We're realizing this man was a human being. He just wasn't a writing machine. And he had his own struggles, he had his own doubts, he had his own fears. I want to capture that in the show also, to make him a living, breathing human being. Brilliant in many ways, wonderful writer, very productive, became a tremendously well-known figure. All that comes out too, to some degree. But it's the human that I want to emphasize on the stage also. If they come away feeling those two things, this guy's a great writer, I think I want to read him. This guy did not shy away from the difficulties of living. He admitted them. He even urges us to realize that Jesus, if you believe he was the Son of God, as Lewis certainly did, and Christians do, Jesus struggled. And that's one of the parts I like in Lewis the most, trying to help Christians understand, if you feel anxiety, please don't see it as a defect in your faith. Christ himself struggled. He had anxiety. You heard me deliver that section last night, which comes from a variety of sources, but that's not as important right now. It's just I'm including that material because I think it helps us understand that even someone as cerebral in some ways as Lewis was also a human being, and he had his own struggles, as we all do.
Let's drop back for a second and have you talk. I described in the introduction about where you teach, but tell us about how long you've been there and the types of courses that you teach, your day job, so to speak.
Yeah. I just finished my 27th year teaching at Anderson University, which is in Anderson, Indiana. I never thought I'd be back there. I went there as an undergraduate. It's a small school, but miraculously, really, I was asked if I wanted to come interview there when I was less than a week away from accepting a position, probably, at the University of Missouri-Rolla. Things worked out, and I ended up back in my alma mater. I teach American literature, several different courses in American lit, modern drama, a variety of writing courses, though my teaching has sort of evolved. My teaching responsibilities have evolved over the years, so I teach mostly just freshman composition now if I teach writing. I also teach the first course in the university's honors program. I team teach it with a history professor whose specialty is the Holocaust, and we have focused on war and peace in the Western tradition. So even though I'm teaching that course to help the students, the honor students, learn how to write a good research paper, I'm also covering content that will help them consider, in the world of literature, how war, such a small topic, right, has been approached by three different writers. And I vary sometimes in which writers I assign, but that's a joy to teach because they're very, very bright students. I was the chair of the department for 25 years, and this past summer, the summer of 13, I finally came to my senses and resigned from that position. I realized I've been doing this a long time, and I'm getting kind of tired of all the paperwork, the reports. And I think my colleagues were tickled, delighted, and shocked all at the same time. But I don't miss it. I'm glad not to be chair anymore. I was chair a long time.
You made some reference in terms of the a visit with C.S. Lewis that you have some various formats or lengths. Tell us a little bit more about that, as well as other shows related to Lewis that you either have or you are developing.
Yeah, I have developed a variety of shows for Lewis. There is the 90-minute version, which you saw. And as I said briefly before, I can offer shortened versions of that particular show, that particular approach to Lewis. But I have developed two other shows that are distinctly different. One is very much for children. It lasts about 30 minutes. It focuses almost exclusively on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. As I sit in a chair and have the children sit near the chair, on the floor usually, listening to Lewis, he reads passages from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I really work at hamming up my acting skills when I do that. And I have someone show color slides of the Pauline Baynes various wonderful pictures from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But I don't just do that. I start the show with a variety of funny passages and informative passages that we find in the book, do you know the book, Letters to Children? There are some wonderful passages in there that have Lewis addressing not just the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Children often wrote to him and asked him about Aslan. But also just quirky things, like his dog and how he felt about his dog, or the pets and the other things that would happen at the kilns and what kind of man he is. He even describes himself at one point. And I take advantage of that, and, you know, because I'm pretending I'm Lewis. And I say, well, I'm kind of fat and I'm bald. And, you know, the children get a kick out of that. So I try to make him very human at the beginning. He's almost like a little bit of a grandfather figure for them, probably, before I slide into the text. That's one show. That's 30 minutes. Another show I've developed, I haven't done very often, but I really enjoy it when I've had a chance to do it, is a show that focuses strictly on Lewis's teen years, which ends with his horrible experiences in World War I. And at the very end, he focuses on the poems that came out of that experience, which are to be found, of course, in Spirits in Bondage, his first published book. And I read aloud, and I give the audience handouts of these two poems so they can follow along. The two poems that are starkly different. You know, one that's just filled with bitterness and cynicism and anger towards God, whom he blamed for the war. And another poem where it's an insight, it gives us a window of where this man would go. He would not give up all hope on existence here and on humanity and even on God. You can see it in that particular poem. And the audiences I've had with that show find it a fascinating window of time for us to consider this man who's years away yet from becoming a Christian, but is very much a very sensitive, intelligent human being who's searching for meaning, but not quite sure that he's going to find a benevolent creator. He isn't at that point convinced that there's some benevolent creator over it all. So those are my three basic different shows on Lewis. But I would want to reemphasize that the one that I give most often, I can vary its length a great deal. It depends on the venue's needs and wants.
Well, Kevin, how can people contact you for either questions or for more information about how to book you?
The way of contacting me is probably not as efficient as it could be in other ways, but I urge anyone who visits my websites, in this case, www.cslewislive.com, to simply email me. My email address is there, and it's K.P. Radaker, which is spelled R-A-D-A-K-E-R, at Anderson, with an O-N ending, .edu. That's how people contact me, to start any conversations we want to have about either booking me or simply asking me questions about the shows.
Final question for you, Kevin, before I let you go, and that is, I'm sure there are many comments that you can probably think about that feedback people have given, but what's maybe one or two as we close here that stand out in your mind?
Wow, I've received so much positive feedback in the last 4 years or so. Two that stand out, though, Edwin Brown, whose wonderful collection of first editions and manuscripts and so on that are housed at Taylor University, saw my show back in the fall of 2010, and he gave me one of his books, and it's inscribed, and he thanks me there, too. But that night, he told me afterwards that it was one of the most inspiring moments in his life, and here's a man who's devoted so many years of his life to studying Lewis and putting together this wonderful collection of Lewis manuscripts and letters and so on. And that meant a great deal to me because I knew that this is a man who just adores Lewis in so many different ways. And for me to have brought to life to some degree this great man that he admires meant a great deal. But I also meet so many people who have read enough Lewis to make a good judgment of how well I've crafted the script so that it really is informative and emotive all at the same time. and the librarian here at Taylor, he told me he admired how I've combined and interweaved effectively so many different parts of the nonfiction texts. And that means a lot to me because I don't want to de-emphasize the emotive power of a show like this and how important that is. That's very important. But I want my selection of materials to be approved by those who have read Lewis enough to know if they think the choices I've made are effective and wise and represent Lewis well. And when I get people like the people I've just mentioned telling me that they like what I've chosen and they think it's very effective and it's very broad and it's sweeping and it's capturing so many different elements to be found in Lewis, that's very encouraging for me. It's what I'm hoping to achieve.
Well, Kevin, thank you for your time.
Thank you, William. I appreciate it. It's been a joy to be here.
Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, and let me thank you, the listener, for joining me today. Be sure to check out the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com for links mentioned in the show and for previous podcasts that include a four-part miniseries with Dr. Crystal Hurd on Lewis and his views on women, Paul McCusker on the annotated Screwtape Letters, and a variety of essay chats on a single shorter work by Lewis, just to name a few of the past programs. Again, that's EssentialCSLewis.com, where you can find other features like a daily fact, quote, and quiz on Lewis. EssentialCSLewis.com is a feature partner site on the Middle Earth Network.